Du lytter til Radio Netherlands, den hollandske internationale radiostation. Du lytter til Media Network, det ugentlige kommunikationsprogram med Jonathan Marx og Diana Jansen. Og i denne uge en fyldestgørende rapport om EDXI-konferencen i Rebildbakker, Jylland i Danmark.
Hello, don't worry, this is Media Network, with a report from a conference center right in the heart of a Danish forest. The place is famous for its 300-year-old stunted beech trees, a great place to relax and reflect. And that may be one of the reasons why the 29th European DX Council conference, which took place over this last weekend, was such a resounding success. Just over 100 radio listeners and broadcasters gathered to share a common interest in radio. The two organizing clubs, the Danish DX Listeners Club and the Danish Shortwave Clubs International, set a brand new standard for radio conventions, combining a lot of fascinating talks with time for person-to-person discussion. Jonathan Marx represented Radio Netherlands and this program in particular. Jonathan, why was it different?
Well, if you read the professional press, shortwave broadcasting audiences are supposed to be fading. I know that reception conditions on shortwave are rather poor at present because of the low sunspot number. Nevertheless, the European DX Council says it represents the interests of nearly 10,000 specialized listeners across this continent, and sales of shortwave radios are steady. Larry Magny, publisher of Passport to World Band Radio, quoted a figure of 1 million shortwave-capable radios being sold across the counter in North America each year. New technology might be here, but the impact has been to stimulate specialized listening, in contrast to ham radio, where sales have plummeted.
Now let's see what you managed to record at the conference, starting outside.
Okay, put the cassette in.
Right, now let me get the proper pronunciation of your name. Finn Corner? Right. Finn, where are we?
We're outside the hotel up in the northern parts of Jutland in a small town called Rebild, where we have had the DX conference in the area called Rebildbakker.
And that's near which major town?
The major town here is Aalborg. That's around 30 kilometers from here.
And what's the level of interest at the moment as far as DXing is concerned? Is it something that's dying?
I feel it's on the contrary at present. I've seen quite an activity on the DX scene, from especially from the Finns, the Swedes. They've been very active. I don't think it's dying.
But you have a normal professional job. You work in a bank. You come home. Why do you want to listen to Latin American music in the middle of the night on shortwave?
Yeah, first of all, the best reason is that when I come home from the work, I have to attend the horses and cats and what have we at home. So I'm never finished doing all of that until we can hear the Latins. But I love to relax in front of the radio. It's the magic of sharing. You get to learn a lot. I'm still studying Spanish in my leisure hours, but it's also the hunt instinct, because they are very hard to get, and it's a challenge to get a station that nobody else presumably have heard.
Do you think that younger people are being drawn away by satellite television and maybe home computing?
Yes, I think in the first place they'll be dragged away, but maybe the computers will stimulate the interest, in fact, because combining the two interests, computers and radio, may get a lot of young people to come back to the hobby. And the receivers are getting better. It's easier to tune in. You have many international broadcasters leaving some of the interesting bands so that you can hear the small domestic stations.
Most people had paid out of their own pocket to get to Denmark. I asked them why they'd done so. Marie Lam from New York had crossed the Atlantic.
Oh, yes, I'm quite pleased with it. Yes, I've been to a lot of the American conferences, but I like this one very much, too.
Why?
Well, a lot of things seem to be very informative. There's quite a bit of meat to all of the different discussions, some very interesting things being said, and a lot of nice people here, too.
Elizabeth Cummings had family reasons for attending, at least on the surface.
partly because my husband is a keen DXer, so it's his first choice. But I'm not disinterested in conferences of this nature because I grew up in radio in the BBC in the early days of 1946 onwards.
So this idea of frequency management and so forth is actually nothing new?
Nothing new and nothing's changed. There's never enough frequencies and never the right frequencies.
What do you think about the influence of new technology? I mean, is that diluting things? Is it making less interesting or more interesting or what?
I think it really makes it more interesting. People always say this new technology changed things. It does change things, but always for the better. Other things don't die. They continue to live, but in a different form.
What's the fascination of radio, though? Because if you say to people, we're going to form a television club of people who watch television, I mean, they laugh at you. So why do people get together and talk about radio?
I think because radio, you can use your imagination. Television, the pictures are there. You don't have to imagine what it's like. But radio, you do. And I think in a way, you have to listen more carefully and with much more attention than you do for television.
There were updates on broadcast developments, too. Henning Knutsen works at Deutsche Welle and was the first with news at the Broadcasters Forum.
One is good and one is bad. Let's start with the good news, as usual. It has been in the discussion to reduce many of the language services from Deutsche Welle. First and foremost, the European programs were in the discussion to be closed down. And a couple of weeks ago, the board of Deutsche Welle decided to continue all programs, which means none, not one, is going to be closed down at the first period at least. We have 10 European programs, as you will know. I'm representing the Danish program. The bad news, and that's especially for you, DX, is of course very bad news, is that Deutsche Welle is going to close down the shortwave transmission of these European programs by the end of 1996, so that these European programs will entirely be heard on satellite, on Astra. Deutsche Welle is looking for rebroadcasting partners, which mean radio stations in the respective countries that are able to pull down our program from satellite and then broadcast it within their own network or terrestrial frequencies.
Wolf Harrand, media editor for Radio Austria International's German program Kurzwellen Panorama, noted that they also hope to expand their satellite coverage in Europe. At the start of this year, Austria ceased all broadcasts on medium wave. Did anyone notice?
Well, yes and no. The basic fact is that we had, especially in Vienna, Biesenberg, one of Europe's most traditional and most powerful medium wave transmitters. Austria is being covered by FM completely for many years, so there really was no need to cover Austria by medium wave. We did so because we knew that in the neighboring countries, especially what you might call communist countries, we provided a source of objective, unbiased information. Now, with all these reformist countries emerging, it was really a question of budget. Does it really pay? Is it worth the while to spend 16 million Austrian shilling for a service like that? And our management decided, no, it doesn't pay any longer, which is, of course, a pity, because we do know that from north of Norway to south of Italy, from Ireland to the Ukraine, medium wave signals of the home service were picked up. So initially what we wanted to do, really wanted, eagerly wanted to do, was to get hold of those 600 kilowatt transmitters to put out the signals of Radio Austria International. Now, as all of you know, medium wave covers a large area only during the night time, and we could not operate for 24 hours. So it would have simply been too costly to maintain the station for 24 hours just to broadcast for 2 or 3 hours Radio Austria International's program. This is why the whole thing, unfortunately, after more than 60 years, was closed down.
There was good and bad news from the Pacific. In Australia, it appears that funding problems affecting Australia's external service television project may mean budget cuts at Radio Australia to compensate, although alarming reports of a two-thirds cutback at RA on the domestic news show PM have since been withdrawn. On a more positive note, Radio New Zealand International announced this past Monday it's joined the World Wide Web. There's one page at present which has the station's frequency information and details of the World Cup rugby coverage. More pages will follow later. The URL code for those interested is http://www.actrix.gen.nz/users/RNZI. Back to Europe, and George Wood of Radio Sweden reported that their financial problems are not over yet.
No, we had a major blow 2 years ago when we were still getting money through the foreign ministry, and they had to have cutbacks, and they cut our budget by 25%. So we had to cut our services in Spanish, French, and Portuguese, as well as part of our Swedish broadcasts. After that, we got transferred to the regular part of the radio. We get our money from license fees now. We thought that was going to protect us. And now Parliament's gone and decided to cut the radio's budget by 11%, public service broadcasting's budget by 11% across the board, and that does affect us. So that it's a little bit unclear what's going to happen. Hopefully, nobody's going to lose their jobs, and hopefully we'll retain all of our languages. The key is essentially going over to new technology. We'll be doing more we'll start digital editing, which means we won't need so many technicians. We'll cut back on some of our shortwave broadcasts, so we won't have to pay so much for the transmitter time. And we'll reorganize our use of satellites, so we won't have to pay so much for that.
At the EDXE conference, you were giving demonstrations of various radio stations active on the internet. What's happening in Radio Sweden, though?
Well, right now we're kind of in a state of limbo. Many of us have written pages for the internet, for the World Wide Web, that is basically ready to go, and we've been ready to go for several weeks. The problem is partially in the administration. The information department, which has to approve everything and organize everything, is still sort of working through it. The other part is with the lawyers, the company lawyer, because a main part of our input on the internet will be putting out sound, news broadcasts, like local news and the national domestic news in Swedish, and hopefully news from Radio Sweden, at least English and possibly German. But the lawyers are having a problem with the rights. The laws are different in Sweden and Scandinavia than they are in other countries. In America, a lot of people are putting sound out over the internet. They've got different laws in America. In Sweden, they're much more strict about royalties and rights and things like that. For example, for the news agency, the Swedish news agency, we pay them money to broadcast them on the air, but not to broadcast them on the internet. You know, no one's ever thought about that before. The music we play, you know, we play massive amounts of money in royalties for the music, but that's to play over the radio, not to play over the internet. And they're scratching their heads and trying to work out, is this something new or is it something old? Like, what do we do with it? And until they decide, we can't put anything out. But we hope to and we plan to.
We have to be careful to put some of the figures into context. If you read some of the magazines that come on the market and talk about the internet, they say, yeah, there may be now 30 million users of the internet. But that doesn't mean to say that 30 million people can download the nice colourful pictures on the so-called World Wide Web.
No, exactly. That 30 million figure is for the number of people who've got email addresses. The figures I've seen for number of actual web users is about a tenth of that. 4 or 5 million people actually are accessing the World Wide Web. And there are a lot of them in Sweden.
Og nu nyt fra de forskellige kortbølgestationer.
Yes, there was also news from Hilversum.
Continuing a tradition started in 1980, Radio Netherlands is now making the 14 most popular receiver reviews available in text form on our worldwide web pages. No photos of the sets are included with the reviews just yet. We don't think the server is fast enough to accommodate the requests. However, the photos are ready, and when the RNW facilities are next upgraded, we'll have photos online. We've listed internet addresses of manufacturers where available. The URL address to remember is simply http://www.rnw.nl/rnw.
Back to shortwave. A final reminder, this coming Saturday, June the 10th, we're planning a bit of a celebration. It's 100 years since the first experiments by Marconi, 60 years of the Netherlands Broadcast Transmitter Company, the Noisema, and it's 10 years since we officially started using the new transmitter site in Flevo. We've decided to show the public how transmitters work in practice by setting up a ham radio station at Holland's Broadcast Museum on the south side of Hilversum. We'll be operating with a special call sign for one day only, PA6RNW, this coming Saturday. We'll start at 08 hours UTC and continue until well past 15 hours UTC until the museum owners throw us out. Look for PA6RNW, active on 80 metres, on 40 metres, around 7070 kHz, plus or minus QRM, and 20 metres, the frequency there to look for is 14200 kHz. Our colleagues at the Madagascar Relay Station are planning to call in using the call sign 5R8RNW, propagation permitting. The time is again from 08 hours UTC onwards until at least 15 hours.
One way to find out the exact frequencies will be to tune into our English transmissions on Saturday, June the 10th, because Jeff Claybar and Jonathan will be at the museum following the progress of the ham radio operation and reporting the contacts as part of the programme Sounds Interesting. The editions at 7.30, 9.30, 11.30 and 13.30 UTC will contain live segments from the museum where you can get the latest frequencies and find out a bit more about what's on show.
The conference in Denmark allowed us also to officially launch the new audio subcarrier service on Astra 1C. Following on from the success of the World Radio Network, we've booked two mono subcarriers on Transponder 64 via Astra 1C to be able to offer a wider range of programmes, including our popular Dutch language service Netwerk Europa.
The start-up of our new Astra 1C service means that there will be a change to Radio Netherlands programming on July the 1st. The English transmission to Europe at 11.30 to 13.25 UTC is being moved back 1 hour and the order of the feature is being swapped. So that means that although Media Network will stay at 11.50 UTC on a Thursday, Research File moves from 12.50 to 10.50 UTC.
As from July the 1st, look for us from 10.30 onwards on 6045 and 9650 kHz. By then we'll also be on Astra 1C, Transponder 64, that's 10.936 GHz, Audio Subcarrier 7.92 MHz. Note that the evening broadcast to Europe at 20.30 remains on the other subcarrier, 7.74. As from September 24th, the start of winter time in most of Europe, the English broadcast will revert to 11.30 UTC. Back to HF, and Finn Kroner told me that Adventist World Radio has been vastly expanding its shortwave usage. That means that the Danish Shortwave Club's international DX programme has benefited from much better audibility. In fact, it's part of their new show, which they call Wavescan.
We've been expanding the program so that at the moment you can hear the European part on most of the broadcasts going on the air from on Wavescan every Sunday.
And how's that produced?
It's produced from with the European part is produced the way that I call the office in England, and then they would reproduce it on tape and send it off to Slovakia. From Slovakia it goes out on all broadcasts now, and even some of the Guam broadcasts will carry it via satellite.
So how old is the material when it goes to air?
Well, it's still up to 6 days, but a big improvement from the previous 10 days.
So if people are interested in tuning in, what are the current times and frequencies?
Well, the European times are 06.20 to 06.45, thereabouts, on 7215 kHz, and the evening broadcast is 21.20 on 6055 kHz.
That's on Sundays?
That's on Sundays. And But all the other broadcasts in English will carry the same broadcast, I presume.
News there from Finn Kroner. I took a call from the answer line with me to the conference.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Chris Rybus calling from Warsaw in Poland. Today, June the 1st, WRN, the World Radio Network programming, is being broadcast for the first time on the Hot Bird 1 satellite, 13 degrees east.
But not for long. The WRN programmes on the Eutelsat Hotbird 1 were in fact only heard this past weekend, while WRN was helping to set up a new service for Radio Canada International, especially aimed at the Canadian forces serving in former Yugoslavia. If you're interested, you can find the new multilingual service on Hotbird 1, 13 degrees east, the frequency 11.265 gigahertz, horizontal polarization, on the audio subcarrier 7.20 megahertz. That's one of the subcarriers of the European Business News transponder.
Karl Majoska, president of the World Radio Network, had more news at the conference to explain how they are bringing many international broadcasters onto cable systems around the continent.
We're trying very hard, yes. We now are on a growing number, and we hope to have more connected over the next couple of months. The main ones for us are the ones in Europe. As you know, we've been on Amsterdam for quite a while now. But we've just added two more. Berlin on 93.85, and that's a very big cable system. And just recently in Brussels, Radio Public on 88.1. So we're trying to hit all the main cities in Europe. As far as the UK is concerned, we've just started a relay in Leeds, Bell Cable Media, on 90.4. So we're trying to extend our cable reach.
It's quite a long list, and maybe more will grow.
We have to make a presentation to the local councils who seem to control the cable in the cities. And we have to do that, as well as we're in competition with other radio stations who want to have cable access. But we've been fortunate, and we've been able to, win over the councils, and have been given the go ahead. But once we do that, we also have to then pay for carriage, as well as pay for public performance licenses, music content, and so on, copyright fees. And this all begins to add up. But I think cable is very important, especially in the main cities of Europe. And we're trying to hit as many as possible. The next ones we hope to be on are in Bonn in Germany. We're trying very hard to be on Strasbourg in France and Vienna in Austria. And then we've kind of built up quite a number of main cities in Europe. And as far as the United Kingdom is concerned, we've, as you can see by this list, Jonathan, it is growing.
Listeners in Canada can now hear programs from WRN throughout the night. But what about further afield?
Yes, we are working on plans to be heard in Africa and over the Asia Pacific. What we're planning to do is to use two satellites. AsiaSat 2, we're counting down for the launch of that satellite. But the other satellite is Intelsat at 1 degree west. And the plan is to uplink to 1 degree west, which then is received over the whole of Africa, but as well as in Israel. And that will get retransmitted to AsiaSat 2, which then covers the whole Asia Pacific area. Once we're actually on AsiaSat 2, the signal can be downlinked on 2 meter dishes. Now, this is still quite big. 2 meters is a big dish. But we feel that as a sort of a point-to-point link for further redistribution, to be on AsiaSat 2 is a good idea. Now, the bit of news is that Galaxy, who are running the package service, similar to Astra, really, they've got a high-powered satellite in space. And what they do is they are putting together a multi-package of video and radio. And they've asked us to be part of that package. So we'll be available also domestically within Australia as soon as we've got the Asia service working.
So it's a question of gradually building up that link?
Absolutely, yes.
And what sort of response do you get? I mean, you've been running now, nearly 2 years?
Yes, almost, coming up. We get a lot of letters, especially when we change schedules. One thing that we're planning to do is to put together a program guide and have that sent out on a mailing list. The mail comes in, we get a lot of internet mail, email, and indeed for us to then pass those messages onto broadcasters.
Okay, if people are interested in more information about what you're actually putting out, what's the address to write?
The address is, it's World Radio Network, Wyville Court, that's W-Y-V-I-L, 10 Wyville Road, and it's London SW8, 2TY.
That is, in fact, a new address. You've also presumably got a recently new telephone number.
That's right. The new telephone number is 44 for the UK, 171-896-9000, and our fax is the last four digits, 9007.
And what about the internet address?
Internet address is wrn@cityscape.co.uk.
But it wasn't all high technology at the conference. We got another view from Media Networks Asia correspondent Victor Gunatilica, who was also in Denmark.
really happy to be at the conference because I'm meeting a lot of broadcasters, for one thing, and listeners and representatives from radio clubs. But the biggest surprise or, you know, thing for me is that it's a European DX Council, and most of the broadcasters are talking about satellite, internet, and various things which are very relevant to the European listener or the American listener, the person who can afford something. So I find sometimes that I'm in strange surroundings, a little bit like a fish out of water. But it's very nice because probably in a couple of years or maybe 20 years, this is what I'll have to face in Asia.
If you walk down the street, though, in Colombo, you'll find electrical shops. I mean, are they selling cheap computers? Because, I mean, the prices of computers have come down drastically, and people are, certainly in Europe, are telling us that in Asia, if anything's going to explode in the next couple of years in terms of development, it's going to be the Asian market.
Well, walking down the streets of Colombo, I can't find anything cheap by any means. And then, of course, the other big thing is when you buy a computer, you don't buy something obsolete. That, of course, probably you can pick up something cheap. But the cheapest computer that you can pick up in Colombo would cost you about 50,000 rupees, and that's $1,000. And when you look at figures of incomes in Asia and Africa, when the average income of a family, monthly income, would be about $60, $70, we are talking of something that you cannot reach easily.
A view echoed by Dutchman Marcel Roberts.
I was very much impressed by the speech from Victor Kunnetelleke, who really put us back with our feet on the ground after all these discussions about satellite broadcasting. And there are many people in third world countries who don't even have an electric power supply, so their problems are completely different from us West European radio listeners. This morning he said that radio listeners, the DXers, are more sensitive than their receivers. And I think, well, this all should make us thinking.
Talking of sensitive receivers, a couple of new stations were announced at the conference. Steve Witt of the specialist magazine Medium Wave News reported that the British station Viva 963 AM started test transmissions on the 5th of June on, you guessed it, 963 kilohertz. They announced a July starting date for programmes. Their service area is Greater London, but since 963 kHz is a clear channel in the UK during the daytime, it seems to be covering most of southeast England. And then there was this.
This is radio station EDXE 95.
Hello, I'm Stig Heivik-Nielsen. This is Denmark on Shortwave. Broadcasting from Rebild, Denmark, we are radio station EDXE 95.
A bit of history now. The antenna was strung between the chimney of the boiler house at the conference centre, and two transmitters operated on 7 and 15 megahertz three times a day. Paul Foggett was one of the producers, although most people know him by other names.
Yeah, well, I've been in broadcasting ever since the way in the good old days when you were not supposed to tell people who you were. And then you used names such as Paul Dane and Paul Anthony and Paul Alexandra. But these days I call myself Paul Foggett, and I work in local radio in Denmark. And that's nice. You know, we've had local radio since 84. It's really a small boy's dream come true. When you've been working with radio as a hobby, you've tried with pirate radio, and then you can live of it. It's fantastic. A hobby is what you live. You get your money, daily outcome of it. It's fantastic. And then I'm also doing a bit of shortwave again from the conference here, where we have this limited license for 4 days, radio station EDXE 95. We're producing the programs at my radio station, Radio Viborg, rushing it up here to Rebildbakker. It takes 45 minutes, and then we're rushing it down to the transmitter, and on the air we go. We do that every morning at 6 o'clock, so it's in the morning, so it's very early.
Was it difficult putting that station on the air? Because, I mean, Denmark has officially actually stopped broadcasting on shortwave. Radio Denmark, of course, still has programmes on shortwave, but it uses facilities in Norway.
Actually, it was rejected by the Danish Telecom. And after that, Radio Denmark suddenly came into the picture and they said, well, we would be perfectly have the responsibility for the programmes. And then they said, well, then it's okay. But it took about, I think, a year and a half or something. And then the license came, was it on Wednesday or something, just 2 days prior to the actual transmission.
And the facilities too? I mean, are there somebody here actually watching it?
Yeah. There's an engineer watching it. Then there's two or three or four people from Denmark's radio also watching it. And actually today, well, they don't care about most of what's being said, but today we said, thank you very much for the people that put up the antenna. And we mentioned the name of the firm, and we actually had no cutting gear with us. So we had to use a knife we borrowed in the kitchen and just cut this really out before it was being aired.
What's happening then? Is the program pre-recorded and listened to?
It's pre-recorded, and then they listen to it, and then we put it on there.
It made it to Holland. I heard the last broadcast back home on Monday night. Well, that's the media news for now. More next week. Now, Diana has the weather.
Yeah, so let's bring up the line to Melbourne, where Mike Bird is looking out of his bedroom window.
Well, at the moment, it's raining, and it's about 10 degrees, so it's very cold here in Melbourne.
Well, we've got a bit of the same here in Hilversum at the moment. We call it rotweer in Dutch. Now, what about the solar weather these past 7 days?
Well, the storm we forecast for the 31st of May and the 1st of June luckily didn't eventuate. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux was 69 at the start of the week. On Monday it reached 82, and by Tuesday it had dropped back to 79. The average works out to 75.4, which equals an effective sunspot number of 13, and that is up 13 points on the previous week's level. The Geomagnetic Field Disturbance Indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 25 and 7, which represents active to quiet conditions. The magnetic field was active on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. From Sunday, the magnetic field has been generally quiet to unsettled.
And what about between now and next Thursday, June the 15th?
Well, Diana, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should be quiet to unsettled until Monday, when we expect a coronal hole will produce active to minor storm conditions until Tuesday. Hopefully from Wednesday, the magnetic field will return to quiet to unsettled thresholds.
Hope so. Thank you, Mike. And that's all for now.
But don't forget to listen to the experiment on Saturday. Back soon. Bye for now.
Media Network var produceret af Radio Netherlands. Copyright 1995.
That's a great one because you can... 1995. 1995.